Passed over in the 1999 draft, Brendan Iambadejo chased his NFL dream through 8 different teams in 4 different leagues over 4 years before finally earning a roster spot with the Miami Dolphins in 2003.
Like every time, honestly, it's like, what can I do different? Like, this is who I am and this is how I play and this is what I do. But every time you just had to make little tweaks. And for whatever reason, I was the type of guy that I always wanted my hard work to show and lead by hard work and effort. You know, train as hard as I could in the gym. And I was like, I don't know if that was enough to be like the hardest worker in the weight room than to get on the field. Like, it does come down to X and O's and your knowledge of football. But yeah, I would definitely get discouraged. But as long as there was an opportunity, then I'm like, all right, man, let's start all over again and let's see what we could do. And eventually I got in. But I think more than me changing, I think the league changed.
I'm Seth Levitt, a former member of the Dolphins Media Relations Department.
And I'm OJ McDuffie, a 2-time team MVP. And today in the Fish Tank, the former long shot details his journey to becoming one of the top special teams players in the entire National Football League, a Super Bowl champion, and an advocate for something far bigger than football.
Hey, preach.
Play something funky.
You're now diving into the Fish Tank.
Dive up in that fish tank. Who that? Sitting down with Seth Living. Seth. OJ. Juice Man. Ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans. Yeah. Golf fans. Number one. Of course, y'all. This ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank right here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt, DJ Preach is in the back, and my main man, Juice. You pulled out the Fish Tank hat for this one. I love to see it.
Well, you know that, man. You always got to represent Big Seth.
Absolutely.
You know, Dolphins and the Fish Tank, they go hand in hand, don't they?
They do for now. I hope it stays that way. It is the NFL.
There you go. It is NFL. You're right.
You never know. Well, I am fired up, man. I'm just going to welcome him in, and then we'll talk about all the pleasantries. But Brendan Iambadejo, welcome to the Fish Tank. Thank you so much for doing the long distance dive in.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I know we've been planning for a while to be on the show, so I'm excited to chop it up with you and DJ Preach, of course, OJ. So, man, let's dive in. Let's talk about it. There's a lot of exciting stuff going on right now, too. So
there is a lot to talk about. Yeah, and it's been a long time. So, Juice, we were just saying right before you got on, the last time I saw Brendan, we were at the Fort Lauderdale Airport. I don't know who was coming, who was going. He was there with his family. He was playing with the Bears, so it's been a minute. It's been a minute. And I feel like I've just gone all downhill since then. But this guy looks like he just stepped off the field. Like, he's still playing.
Yeah, he does. I mean, damn, man. You know, Seth, man, it ain't fair, bro. Honestly, man. It's just not fair, man. Good looking brother. You know what I mean? Still got, you know, all them damn muscles and, you know what I mean, shit like that, man. This ain't cool, man. That's why I'm gonna go put a sweatshirt on real quick.
Hey, Juice, I think the secret is they say a body in motion stays in motion. So you know, we in the fish tank and I'm in the ocean. I'm just trying to stay in motion, baby. You know what I'm saying?
I love it. That's perfect. Fantastic. So, you know, we just had Akin Adell on the show and really enjoyed learning about the meaning behind his name. And, you know, of course, I start doing the research, and your name is also Yoruba, right? Or Yoruba, is it pronounced Yoruba or Yoruba?
Yeah.
Yoruba.
And, yeah, Yoruba.
Okay, so tell me, I already messed up his name. I hope I'm not messing up yours, but tell me how bad my pronunciation of your name was, and I'll apologize just now in advance. I'll give you my apology for that.
Actually, it's not bad. You kind of just got to fake it till you make it. And the funny thing is that Akin's last name is Ayodele. I mean, I know he goes by Adele, right? And my accent isn't even right, but my first name is Oladele. So we have almost the same, names. And the names are super interchangeable. Like, my brother's Obafemi. And so, and of course he was a Dolphin as well. But, and of course we got a bunch of Nigerian players on the team now. So it's always cool. Adwale Ogunleye. So, you know, the Nigerian players, we come and we thrive in Miami. We love playing in Miami.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You guys definitely have thrived, and it's really cool. And it's also weird the way it all kind of stacks up when our guests start showing up one after the next. But, you know, when you just mentioned your first name, I didn't know that either. I always thought it was interesting that Femi was Obafemi and you're Brendan.
Right.
And like, so how did that work? And then I did the research and turns out Brendan is actually your middle name.
Correct. Yeah, and my brother's middle name is Devin, but you know, we're right. We got the Irish middle names, right. And then we got the Nigerian first names because my mom's Irish and my dad's Nigerian, so my mom had to have some say so in there. You know,
good
what I'm saying?
Good for her. Good for her. That's so why did you go with your middle name, and why did he? You know, I mean, he's not here, so but he stuck with his first name, and you decided to really push forward with your middle name.
Yeah, it's a quick story. When we were 10, we grew up in Chicago. We grew up in the Lathrop Homes Projects in Chicago until I was 10. My brother was 11 or 12. Then we moved to California. So we traded gangsters for granola when we moved. And along with that granola, nobody knew how to say hola dele, or dele is what all my family would call me. So I'm like, man, just call me. Like, I had to like assimilate. I'm like, all right, y'all need some white names over here with this granola. Just go ahead and call me Brendan. I already got you ready. I'm ready for y'all. And then here's the kicker. Then I go down to South Florida and everybody wants to call me Brandon. In the South, they call me Brandon. I go to Chicago, my friends call me Dele. And then in California, it's Brendan, but they messed that up too. So, man, just call me BA. I would just keep it simple.
Right.
We'll go with that.
Yep.
I love it.
Oh, man. So, BA, let's talk about you and your brother, Obafemi. You know, we had the Pouncey Twins on the show. We had both of them on at one point. We just had Mike back on. And their situation is unique because they're twin brothers, and you know, and their bond is so special. I know you guys aren't twins necessarily, but you're only 18 months apart. We have to imagine though, when you guys were growing up, you're incredibly close, and also shared one hell of a football journey together. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, OJ. I mean, it's been really special having a brother. I mean, 18 months older than me, but I think the difference between the Pouncey twins and us is that he was a father figure to me. He was also a brother, but he's also a father figure because when we moved. We did grow up in Chicago, but we lived in Nigeria before that. And my dad stayed in Nigeria, and then we moved to Chicago. And my mom was a single mom, so my brother had to be that father figure. But as we got older, we kind of figured things out. And there was more competition in my house than there was outside of my house. So once we started rolling and doing our thing, like once we got to 15, 16, 17, 18, and we were lifting and training and running and eating and doing all those things, there was really the competition outside of the house wasn't nearly as fierce as the competition in the house. So I think I benefited more than my brother benefited from that relationship. But I would like to think that iron sharpens iron, but he really pushed me. So, you know, like I was at his level when he was 17 and I was 15, I was kind of at his level. So I was always kind of a step ahead, but he kind of had to formulate the plans. He was the icebreaker breaking through the ice. But I think the most special thing about kind of our whole athletic and competitive journey together was my first NFL play that I ever played, because I was cut from three teams before I ever made it to the Dolphins, which is the first team I ever played on. I was in the tunnel at the stadium. It wasn't Joe Robbie then. I can't remember what the name was then.
Who knows, right? It's been seven names.
It's had a lot of different names.
Hard Rock, you know.
Shit, it might have been Joe Robbie, right? Yeah. But we're in the tunnel. I look right next to me and my brother is right next to me. You know, this dream that we had been chasing since we were kids. And I was like, at the time, I was probably like 24, 25, because I'd been cut so many years from the league. And I'm like, holy moly, my brother's right here next to me. I'm about to run on the field and we're about to play in my first NFL game. He already played in a few seasons, but that was in a Dolphin uniform. So yeah. One of my fondest memories, that was actually my first game, my first time on a roster. Yeah, very special memory to go in with him. And then I got a special memory going out as well, but we'll talk about that later.
We'll get there. There's a lot in between. There's a lot in between to talk about. And you know, you just kind of glossed over it, but you talked about being cut by a number of different teams. Your journey to the NFL from a football perspective, your journey in life is incredible, but your journey to the NFL from a football perspective is wild to me. You know, you're a first team all Pac-10 guy as a senior at UCLA. You don't get drafted in 99. And then, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, I was cut from a couple of teams. Folks, listen to this grind this dude was on. Training camp with the Falcons 1 year, training camp with the Bears the next year, Canada, right, with Winnipeg and Toronto. XFL, why not? Let's give that a shot. The LA Extreme. NFL Europe, sure. We'll go over to Amsterdam, play with the Admirals. We'll go back to Canada with the BC Lions. And then finally, you get to go to camp and have that opportunity with the Dolphins in 2003. 4 freaking years you chased that dream, Brendan. Talk about what it was like to finally make a roster, for cut day to show up and Stu doesn't tell you to bring your playbook and go upstairs or whoever was the Turk at that time. What was the journey like, and how in the hell did you stay motivated? And was there ever a moment where you were like, man, I'm just going to throw in the towel and do something else?
Yeah, honestly, Seth, if I had to do it over again, I don't even know if I could do it again.
Wow.
You kind of going through that whole process, like you kind of just don't know what you don't know, right? So in the CFL, they don't even have weight rooms and they don't have proper training facilities. If you get hurt in the CFL, then you go to the doctor, you wait in line with everybody else. You get to jump the line because they kind of have a socialist medical system there in their healthcare. But like, say you, like, I think I like had this thing called a mallet thumb where I tore a ligament in my thumb. I had to go wait in, like, there wasn't no special doctor's office, or there wasn't no doctors coming to us. I was sitting there waiting with everybody else, but they had been waiting 3 months to get their thumb looked at. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I got to skip the line, but then I was just with the regular doctors up there. When I wanted to train, I had to have a membership at the local gym. So it was, man, it was very different, but also it was great and it was amazing being in the CFL. And when I first got there, one of the veteran players, because, you know, oh, I'm American. And they would play the Canadian, oh, Canada, the Canadian national anthem. And I wasn't hyped up for it, you know? But perspective is everything, right? Like, this is the country that's giving me a shot. Yeah. This is the country giving me a chance. And eventually that, oh, Canada, was very similar to me as the national anthem by the time I left after playing two seasons. Like, you had to have a lot of gratitude and just the opportunity to keep playing. And the funny thing is that the CFL then is what the NFL is now. So I was kind of a player ahead of my time. I couldn't crack a lineup back then because it was 2 yards in a cloud of dust. It's like, let's hand it off to Rob Conrad. Let's hand it off to whatever tailbacks are just going to put their head down. Larry Zonka, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's not the kind of football I played back then, you know? So I really fit in today's game. But, man, it was a tough grind, and just getting cut, getting your heart broken, then having to do it, having to have the courage to do it all over again. But my support system was my brother. He was in the league. He was playing in Baltimore winning Super Bowls, or he was playing in Minnesota with Denny Green. And he was the one that kind of gave me the opportunity and kept putting food on the table, and I would live with him and I would just continue to train year round. But man, honestly, if I had to do it all over again, I don't know if I could. It was that tough, but I was forged. I was forged during those 4 years.
Yeah. That's a great point though. You said, you know, did you ever, you never consider throwing in the towel?
I mean, Juice, like every time, honestly, it's like, what can I do different? Like, this is who I am and this is how I play and this is what I do. But every time you just had to make little tweaks. And for whatever reason, I was the type of guy that I always wanted my hard work to show and lead by hard work and effort, you know, train as hard as I could in the gym. And I was like the Dolphins Iron Man every year. Coach John Gamble was our strength and conditioning coach. I'd win that competition every year. But I don't know if that was enough to be like the hardest worker in the weight room than to get on the field. Like, it does come down to X and O's and your knowledge of football as well, beyond just being a great guy in the locker room and in the community. So, yeah, I would just try to find and make little tweaks. But, yeah, I would definitely get discouraged. But as long as there was an opportunity, then I'm like, all right, man, let's start all over again and let's see what we could do. And eventually I got in. But I think more than me changing, I think the league changed eventually as I got in, because, you know, you had Peyton Manning coming in and Tom Brady, and it just wasn't hand the ball off as much as it had been in the past, you know. So I think it was a combination of just the timing kind of just worked for me. And yeah, I eventually made it.
Yeah, I think that makes sense about you talking about, you know, Canada's always been a throwing league. Now the NFL's turned to kind of where Canada is now. So that makes a lot of sense. Let's go back to and talk about the 2003 team. You know, I know you really made your money on special teams, but man, that locker room with the linebackers, all the linebackers in there. I mean, what was it like to be a part of that room with Zach and Junior Seau, and then be a part of a defense also had JT and Sam and Pat and Wale, you already talked about a little bit. So many Dolphin greats. On offense, I mean, damn, Ricky on the other side toting the rock. And, of course, being on the team with your brother, man. I mean, how special, you know, was it to be a part of this as being your first opportunity really in the league? And, and spending it with your brother.
Yeah, you know that, you know, my first year, we went 10-6. It was the first time a 10-6 team didn't go to the playoffs. And Coach Wonstadt. that hurt, right? And then all of a sudden you got 8-8 teams going to the playoffs now, you know what I'm saying? But 10-6 and we couldn't crack the playoffs. It was a good team. I was there, I was just trying to survive. So I couldn't really, there's a lot of things that I missed, but looking back, you know, like you had mentioned some of the stars on the team with Jason Taylor and Zach Thomas and Moreland Greenwood and, you know, having a deep linebacker core. Yes, I did my thing on special teams, but yeah, we had a lot of special players, Sam Madison, Pat Surtain. I'm looking at the roster right now, Sammy Knight, Brock Marion. Of course, I'm talking defense, Larry Chester, Tim Bowens, Adwale Ogunleye. So we had some monsters back there.
You should have won 11 then.
We, We should, but we did lose some close games, though. Yeah. We did lose some close games. But the thing I just remember about all the teams I played on all had the same DNA. Yeah. Always had a good running back, always had good defense, and always had good special teams. Where did I play? I went from Miami to Chicago to Baltimore.
Yeah.
Keith Armstrong was a special teams coach. He's still a special teams coach right now. Coach Harbaugh, his lineage, special teams. In Chicago, Devin Hester, special teams. So there was the same kind of chemistry and DNA on all the teams I played on. And I think, you know, that's why that team in Miami, that's why I was able to stick around and play 10 years in the league after getting cut from three different teams, is that special teams, that defense, and great offensive and defensive lines, just hard-nosed football.
Well, the 2003 season was your first season. Obviously, 2004, you lined up again for the Dolphins, special teams guy. But Monday night, December 20th, 2004, you get the start. And we're playing host to the Patriots. At this point, they're on that crazy run. They're the defending Super Bowl champs. They won two out of the last three. Tom Brady is, at that point, we're like, oh, my God, what more does he need to do? He's a surefire Hall of Famer. Who knew that 18 years later he'd still be playing and, you know, could beat at 10 Super Bowls. But they had become that dynasty, and they show up to Miami with a 12-1 record. Now, here's the one thing everybody knows about New England, no matter how good they were, when they came down to Miami,
we got them.
We always had them. There was something about coming down here that we always gave them our best, regardless of the record. Now, at this point, the record's 2-11. So, I don't think anybody in their right mind thought, all right, well, this is the year Miami's not going to be able to put up a fight. And there, you know, we're going toe to toe with them. AJ Feely is the starting quarterback, but he hasn't thrown a pick, so at least we're still in the game. And with 2 minutes left, the Dolphins just scored to bring it, I think, within 4 or 5. And Brady's got 2 minutes to kill the clock and win the game. Tell us what happens.
Yeah, man. So I'd been watching film because this was my first NFL start, right? Like, I've been cut from, you know, I've been sitting at home or playing in the CFL or whatever for like 3 or 4 seasons. I'm in my second year in the league. I finally get to start. So, like, I hadn't started a game since 1999. We're in 2003 now. Right. And really, 1998. It was 1999. It was the Rose Bowl. It was January. It was the last time I started in a football game. So,
yeah, it's 2004. It's December of 2004.
I started in Canada, actually, so I take that back. Yeah. But I was watching film, and usually you watch film, the last 4 games of film is what you usually watch, because that gives you the most recent DNA of what the team is doing conceptually, right? So I'm watching film, and I'm noticing, like, when Brady's under duress, he's throwing the ball to his outlet or his check down, which is usually a running back. On this particular play, I had the running back. It was Falk, I think. And JT had put Tom Brady under duress. And I'm like, let me just stay close, even though the running back is blocking. I'm like, let me just stay in the vicinity. So in case Tom Brady throws an errant throw, I'm going to go pick it off. I'm going to go win the game myself. And so he did exactly that. And the people think, like, oh, Tom Brady was just throwing the ball away. But no, I'd been watching film and I'd been studying that. And I was ready and I was prepared for that exact play to happen at that exact moment. And that's what happened. So I caught it. Jason Taylor put him under pressure. I caught the interception that, yeah, he was throwing it away, but he was throwing it in the vicinity of his running back. And then we go down there and we get the game-winning touchdown, and we beat them, which was, what, the Monday Night Miracle game. So that was a wild, wild game. And people think, like, oh, you guys got luckier. But, I mean, really, yeah, luck because of preparation. So that was a great win, but the Dolphins continue to do it every time they play the Patriots, no matter how good or bad they are. They're always going to take at least one game from them.
Right. I love you say luck because of preparation. That's that old adage, right? That luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. And for you, like you said, it's your first start. I mean, you basically have waited 6 years for this opportunity, and it's there. And it's not just any interception to kill a game, bro. Like, it's Tom Brady, and he was Tom Brady at that point. Nobody knew what the future held, but he still had done enough to cement himself as a legend. How meaningful was it? Did the weight of everything that it took to get there, did that ever kick in, or were you just so focused on the moment, the orange jerseys, everything that was going on right then and there, or were you ever able to have some perspective as to how big that was?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I realized it at the moment, but the funny thing is my helmet kind of popped off when I got tackled, and I ran into the end zone, and I was celebrating. And I had the biggest smile on my face. You know, like I mentioned, I was, I don't know, 25, 26 at the time. Not probably 27 at the time. But the smile on my face, I look like I was a 10-year-old kid, like at a candy shop. You know what I'm saying? So I look back and I see the pictures of me smiling, my helmet's off, and my teammates are all jumping all over me. David Bowens and all the other guys on defense.
Debo.
So, yeah, nah. Yep, Debo. Now, it was a special moment for sure.
That's so good, man. Man, that's so good. You know, I still have front row seats then, Big Seth. You know, I was still a big fan of the team, man. After I retired,
Your end zone, wasn't it, Juice?
Yeah, it was
my end zone. I think all that happened in your end zone.
Heck yeah, man. Party in my end zone, man. I loved it. Me and my 20 closest friends, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the funny thing is that I didn't get to play with OJ, but OJ was always around. So whether he was doing something with the team, whether he was doing community service, and so now obviously now we're doing this podcast together, but and then we share a mutual friend in Brian Poli-Dixon, but I just didn't.
UCLA boys.
I always felt like, yeah, I always felt like I knew OJ, even though we didn't kind of spend a lot of time together, but he was always around. He was always present. And he obviously always shows his love for the Dolphins. He's always been around. So I always appreciated him. When I'd see him out, he'd take me under his wing, or, you know, we'd go hang out or get some wings or hang out with some mutual friends or whatever. So I appreciate that, man. No doubt. We need more people like you that come back and kind of keep us unified together.
Come back. I didn't leave, bro. I'm from Ohio, dog. I'm not going
back.
Dog.
That's right. You didn't leave. Stick around. We need more people to stick around.
There it is.
That's what's up, man. You know, check it out. Your time in the Dolphin locker room was about 20 years ago, man. And if I look back, and Seth and I, we've been talking about this and think about some of the other guys, I think you and your brother were so much more progressive, you know, than the league and its players were at that time. You know, even something as simple as your style. You know, the tattoos and the piercings, your fashion, your clothes, you know, your choices. Is that a California thing that you guys, you know, brought this way? You know, because a lot of guys didn't get it. You know what I mean? But yeah. I did. I get that stuff, man. And were there, like, level of forward thinking that maybe you guys were exposed to out there that was indeed ahead of its time? Because, look, out east is slow when it comes to fashion and things like that.
Yeah, well, I think that at that time it was kind of forward thinking. But I've been back and I've gone back and several times back and hung out with the Dolphins. Caleb, the player personnel director, he'd invite me back and I'd hang out with the team for like a whole week doing the business combines and stuff like that. And now it's very normal for guys to dress, you know, and express their personalities, whatever that may be, so much that even on all the NFL channels and even when the guys are walking in the stadiums, they're showing how they're dressing and how they're expressing themselves. So I think just, you know, after we moved from Chicago to California, it was very normal to express yourself through the way that you dress or through piercings or through tattoos. Uh-huh. Now I'm going the other way. It's like I'm taking out the tattoos. I'm taking out the piercings.
You're dad now.
I still
now.
Love
That's
all the dress. I know I'm a daddy now, right? But I still love all the dressing and all the fashion. But I also love that guys can express themselves through their fashion. And you see guys doing like bespoke suits or whether it's something different where they can express their personalities and whatnot. And that was not that it was ever frowned upon when I played, but they would definitely question you like, what's up with this guy? He's a little bit different. But we've seen, you know, players be very different in the past, especially starting with like a Dennis Rodman. And then some of the things that Ricky Williams would do as well. Where people would question them just because they jumped out of the box and they didn't want to kind of be in that athlete, that macho box or that box of being confined to what a black man should do, sound like, dress like, talk like. And so I think they kind of set the foundation for that. And then I kind of took it and ran with it. But now guys don't even get scrutinized. It's like now you can make off of your fashion and the way you dress and your style. You can, you know, start businesses or you can get great sponsorships from companies and stuff like that, where that stuff didn't exist back then.
Yeah, I think the NFL had to play a little catch up right there, man. You know, because you think about it, with the advent of social media, you know, the content's always there. So how you represent yourself and what you're wearing or whatever you're doing, man, it's always important to brand yourself, basically, right?
Yeah, and I think the NFL figured it out, but guys have their own social media and stuff now, and then they figured it out too. Yeah. So it's like, oh, you can see a sneak peek when I'm, you know, the NFL will get a sneak peek, but I'll take you through on how to buy the suit or where to go or how to get it custom tailored or whatever the fashion is. So, yeah, it's on a whole nother level now. Once again, I was ahead of my time. I need to be playing today so I could capitalize on all these things.
That's what I was trying to say. You know, back then, you'd walk through the locker room and people would look at you sideways and whatever and the whole thing. And now they'd probably be asking, where did you get that done?
Yeah, or, you know, who's your tailor? Who's your guy?
Right.
Hey, if I could just wind back time a little bit, I'd do it all over again.
Man ahead of his time.
The NFL part, not the CFL part, not the CFL part, the NFL part.
Stop at about 2003, right? Don't go too far back. So
the CFL was so cool, real quick. There's a lady named Jenny.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally, yeah. Like starting in September, cool. There was this lady named Jenny, and I called her the grocery lady because every Thursday or Friday she'd show up with fresh fruit and groceries for the players. And back then you didn't necessarily have access to fruits and vegetables like you do now. And then especially up in Canada, right, where things are very regional. But she'd bring us fresh strawberries, fresh apples or watermelon or whatever. And I call her the grocery lady. But that's how cool the CFL was. The public could come to practice and the grocery lady could come and give the players groceries.
Which, oh, wait. So the grocery lady wasn't affiliated with the team. She was just a fan that would come in and bring. Wow.
She would watch practice. Yep.
That's a whole different deal.
Luckily, we still have the opportunity. I think, I don't know who, the Grey Cup was just yesterday or something. Their Super Bowl just happened. But I don't know who won it. But yeah, I mean, I think it's the next best league. If you're not in the NFL, it's the next best league. So I think it's very important that that league stays up, operating and going, because there'd be guys like me that played 10 years in the NFL, played in 2 Super Bowls, 3 Pro Bowls, and all pro. On special teams that could fall through the cracks and potentially not have an opportunity to get back into the NFL and make an impact on the league, you know?
We've had a handful of those guys. I just mentioned Mark Dixon, who was our best offensive lineman for a while when he was here. Let's not forget Cameron Wake, right? I mean, Penn State guy.
And Cameron Wake was an absolute monster.
He was one of the best players ever play in the CFL. And then, just kind of a find here from the Dolphins after having been cut by the Giants and the whole thing. So, yeah, some really great stories. We're going to get back to
Derek.
Football.
He was Derek at Penn State. That's what happened. Once he got the camera.
He got rid of Derek.
Then he got sweet. In the league.
He definitely did. So, we're going to get back to football in a second, Brendan, but you and Juice just talked about being progressive and ahead of your time. I'm going to fast forward to 2009, where you really stepped into the headlines advocating for the legalization of same-sex marriages, and it became a firestorm. I mean, it truly was ahead of its time. And as a country, there were a lot of folks who were uncomfortable, but certainly in the National Football League, but you didn't back down. And since that moment, you have really dedicated yourself to your activism, particularly in the areas of civil rights, the LGBTQ community. And you were on CNN with Anderson Cooper. You were at Harvard. You were, dealing with the Supreme Court. You went to the league and advocated for conversations around this issue. Tell us why that was and continues to be such an important issue for you.
Right. So I think OJ can appreciate that, he's got a mixed child and I'm a mixed child, but there was a time where black and white couples, they couldn't get married. There's a time where Latino and white or Latino and black couples couldn't get married. So, and that's in the United States in the 60s.
Yeah.
So the monumental case Loving versus Virginia, which ultimately allowed us to let love be love. And so some people want to kind of draw the line like, okay, if a black man wants to marry, a white man wants to marry a black woman, no, that's not going to happen. But eventually we're able to get past that. So if we're going to let love be love, then if a Latino woman wants to marry a white lady, that's a no-go. So that's when I stepped up in 2009. And I was under, the way that I was raised. And also, like, people don't understand that, like, being part of the LGBTQ community, being gay is not a choice. Not just as much as me coming out the color that I came out was not a choice. That's just the way that you're wired. That's the way that God made you. So once you kind of understand that it's not a choice and it's nor is it a sin, then you kind of can understand that, okay, like, why wouldn't they have the same rights that we have? So I think, what really set me off was Britney Spears was able to marry a friend in Vegas and instantly have more rights than friends that I had that were in same-sex relationships, monogamous relationships. And she had more rights in that 2 days or 48 hours that she was married than some of my friends that are in same-sex relationships for 10 years. And then also Obama was running for presidency against McCain, and Obama didn't say if he was pro or against it, but McCain said he was against it. So I wrote an op-ed to the Washington Post. I'm sorry, not the Washington Post. I'm blanking on the name, but it wasn't the Washington Post. It was Huffington Post. So I wrote an op-ed to the Huffington Post, and that thing went viral. And that's where I was just like, man, same-sex marriage, what's the big deal, was the title of it. And that really put me on the front page kind of nationally at the time. And I didn't know it was going to be as big as it was. Cause for me, like, I was raised, like, it's like really literally was not a big deal, especially in California. But yeah, it ended up being a pretty big deal. And I also didn't know I was the first professional athlete, when it comes to baseball, basketball, or football, at least, to talk about same-sex marriage and equality. So me being a mixed race kid, it was kind of just second nature to me, but it was also something that you don't really think about. Like, can you just marry the person that you love? In America at that time, you couldn't. And so, yeah, that was kind of the catalyst for me to write that op-ed.
What I was going to say, though, is, I'm sorry, real quick, is, again, ahead of your time. You right. know what I mean? Because if you were, I mean, that'd be that's normal today. And I think that's awesome, man, taking that leap, you know what I mean? And not give it a damn about what people thought or the repercussions, man. That's what's up right there, man. You definitely a man ahead of your time back then, brother.
Yeah, but I think the cool thing is now is, like, we have an openly gay player in the NFL, and he's the starting player, you know, and it's not a big deal. Like, he's going to go, he's going to contribute. I think what you notice is that we always will have gay players in the NFL, but they have a lot of mental issues having to have lived their life in secrecy. Right. And then after they retire from the league, they eventually come out, but they live a life, you know, where they've been kind of suppressed and they've been held down. Now, if we get to the point where, like, oh, I got a gay teammate, like, so what? Like, just because you're a man and he's a man doesn't mean he's going to like you or he's going to be
looking
at you or
whatever.
You're not even his type. Right. You ain't even my type. I don't even like football players. No?
I'm with you, man.
But I think that like you said, like, we've come a long way and people don't really think about it now. But back then, like, if somebody said you were gay, you'd be like, oh my God. Because me as a straight man, after I wrote that op-ed, like, I had a lot of scrutiny and there was a lot of pressure on my back from me just writing an article and sticking up for people. And I'm not even gay and I felt the pressure, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, I can only imagine how tough it was.
That's what I wanted to ask you, Brendan, is that being ahead of your time and being willing to step out, because that's, you know, I'm sure there were a lot of people. Look, there was probably a lot of homophobia in all of sports, not just football, but there also were probably guys that felt the same way as you, but they weren't willing to step up and step out and have those conversations. Did you feel that people, like, started to question your sexuality or, like, why is this such a big deal to you? If you know, are you gay? Like, did you have to deal with any of that?
Yeah, I mean, there was. And you know, I can't say that NFL locker rooms are the most mature place to have, adult conversations.
1,000%. Right? Yeah.
So, you know, if somebody really wanted to have a conversation, we would have that. But sometimes, like, my teammates would be like, oh, you know, they would just throw some slurs at me. But eventually we kind of got to the point where we elevated and it was like guys knew not to say any gay slurs in the locker room anymore because they knew I was going to hit them up. So I would like to think I had an impact and an influence on them. And then even guys would come up to me and be like, man, I'm so glad you did that. I'm so glad that you know, we have somebody that's in the NFL that's supporting the community. I have a brother, I have a sister that's part of the community. So thank you for doing what you did. And even though they're like, I can't say anything publicly just because I don't want to, you know, I don't want that kind of firestorm on me, but BA, you got it. We'll put it on your back. But yeah, I mean, it got less and less as we got from 2009, it got less and less, but then it really blew up my last year in Baltimore in 2012. And that was a real wild one. There was a delegate from the state of Maryland or the city of Baltimore, Mr. Burns. He's also a preacher, but also an elected delegate for the city of Baltimore that had told me to cease and desist and told me to stop talking about gay rights and stop using my platform and giving away Ravens tickets and raising money for gay rights. And yeah, I mean, I'll let you ask the questions that you want to ask. But yeah, then the pressure came back on full storm in 2012.
Man, I kind of want to continue down this line, man. But let's get back to a little bit more football, man. But that was outstanding, man. That's what it's all about, right there, bro. I mean, stand it up for others and your own rights and whatever it might be, man. But that was outstanding. But let's go back to a little bit of football here. You know, after your 2 years in Miami, you were traded to the Bears. Now, I mean, obviously they did you a solid because we know how things turned out with our beloved Dolphins in those years that followed. And you really took your game to another level, man. Think about it. You know, I mean, you become one of the most respected special teams guys in the league, selected to 2 Pro Bowls with the Chicago Bears, and you play in a Super Bowl right down here in Miami. Then you sign a big free agent deal with Baltimore. You talked about being in Baltimore, make another Pro Bowl, becoming just the second special teams player in the league history to be named to 2 Pro Bowls from each conference. I mean, that's hell. I returned a couple of punts, and I didn't even sniff the Pro Bowl.
Special teams—that's tough, man.
Yeah, man, it's hard, man. That's just respect, man, and that's getting it done, though, too. You start playing more on the defensive side, and your final season, your 10th in the NFL after all that hard work, your 10th NFL season, but, you know, 14 years as a pro, you reached the mountaintop and part of Ravens' Super Bowl 47 championship team, man. The last game you ever played was in a freaking Super Bowl, bro. How was that?
Man, that was wild. And, you know, we talk about the first, my first NFL experience playing a game was with my brother by my side. And then going to a Super Bowl where I have, you know, my wife, kids, mom, sister, brother, all at the game. My last game, I cried like a baby during the national anthem. But that was my last game against the San Francisco 49ers. And that was the Hard Bowl as well. But just talk about like just going out on a high note. It was Matt Burke's last game. It was Ray Lewis's last game. There was a couple other guys that had shut it down after that as well. But the perfect way to wind down just a wild, wild professional career, 14 years of pro ball. I started playing football when I was a senior in high school. So I played 4 years in high school, played 4 years of college, and then my 13, 14 years of professional football. So, man, football was all I knew. And I knew that was my last game, Juice. So it was pretty emotional for me, but I knew.
How'd you know it was your last game?
So going into, I was actually playing a lot of defense that year. And then I was playing special teams as well. I'm a sub, you know, mostly a sub and a nickel linebacker. But getting into the latter part of the season, you know, you have some tricks to stay fresh and whatnot. And then we're playing New England and I'm playing against one of my former teammates, Wes Welker, and he breaks my tackle, right? And I'm like, oh man, Wes Welker breaks my tackle? It's like, I am done. That was the AFC championship game we won. Then we get to the NFC championship. We get to the Super Bowl. Bruh, not for me though. Right. I don't miss tackles. Yeah, I don't miss tackles.
That's right. That's from a wide out.
But just the preparation that it took to get ready, and then, you know, the level of play just wasn't there. Like, I had to do every trick that I had learned over 10 years.
Yeah.
Ice baths, IVs, those little decompression tanks, you know? Yeah. Just as much stuff I could do to be ready. And then I still got there and I was like, man, I'm not even, I feel like 80% of myself, you know? So, but the team got the win. We went out on a high note. Once again, I cried when the confetti fell on our faces. I was crying and got to celebrate with my brother and my family and everybody. So, but yeah, it was a special moment coming in and going out, where it was like a birth and a death, really. Mm-hmm. And then that just propelled me to what I was going to be doing next, you know?
That's awesome, man. Man, that's a hell of a book ending right there. Starting and ending right there. That's outstanding, brother.
Yeah, it definitely is. And like you said, it propelled to what you're going to be doing next. And that's can't let you go without talking about that. And so the first thing I want to talk about is daddy life. Your oldest, so Anaya is, I just saw, she's a high school tennis player. And Juice, guess what the name of the team is?
Dolphins.
The Dolphins. So, right. Is that right? She's playing for the Dolphins. And they just won a third straight city section tennis title. So I know you got to be a proud dad. So talk about what it's like being an active father with three kids in the house, being an entrepreneur. I read that you went back and got your master's at George Washington University. I didn't know that you and Aiken were there together. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then you certainly, with No Hate and everything else, you continue your activism. So you almost seem busier now in your post-career than you were as a player.
Yeah, and Adwale Ogunye was there too, coincidentally. I mean, it was a program built for NFL players, but there was also young professionals that were in the program as well. But yeah, I am definitely busier now than when I played. I own my ownership group. We have 55 Orange Theory Fitness locations, mostly in California.
How many?
Say that number again.
55, Juice, man.
Double nickel?
55.
Double nickel.
Yeah, we got that junior Seau. That's Seau. But I think the special thing about it is that we are the kind of the, I'm not the franchisor, but we are the franchise. And now we have our own employees. We have about 700 employees as well. And so now I see the decisions that, you know, it's different being a player or an employee or being an owner and being the franchise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I see the difference and I understand the decisions that the franchises, meaning NFL franchises, have to take and have to make when it comes to leadership, when it comes to players, when it comes to execution. But I also know what it's like to be a player. So I know, you know, having that company energy and having that right energy in the workplace, so people want to work for you and they want to champion you. And then they want to stick around, like OJ sticked around and wants to continue to be a part of what's going on down in Miami with the special organization. So I kind of see it all full circle now. And the daddy part, it's the same thing. It's like, I want to instill respect, work ethic, hard work, being on time, being diligent. I want to instill all these things in my kids. I don't really care what they do as long as they're doing what they're passionate about. But there's things that you have to do that you don't want to do. So what are the controllables? Being on time, being respectable, being cordial, having a great attitude. So I want to instill those types of things in my children. And so far, it's paying off.
Man, awesome. That's so good, man. Can you talk to my youngest? I love him to death, but sometimes, you know, he just wants to play games and doesn't want to put that extra work in sometimes.
Sometimes they don't listen to daddy either. So if you talk to mine, I'll talk to yours. Right, just because I'm doing those things doesn't mean it's working either.
Right. It's working. They just don't always let you see it. That's how it happens with my kids. Everybody says, your kids are so polite. They're so great. And I'm like, you need to come over to the house a little bit
more. Right. Yeah. Seth, same. I'm waiting for the payoff. I keep planting the seeds and watering these plants now. I'm waiting for the payoff.
It's paying off, brother. It's paying off. I love it.
All right. Before we let you get out of here, Brendan, we've got a thing on the fish tank that we do called the 2-minute drill. Now, you mentioned you were a nickel linebacker at times, so you're probably in there a lot during a 2-minute drill for the offense. But the defense, you know, hell, you're trying to get off the field, right? I mean, that's right. The job. You turn it over, get a stop, get the ball back to the offense, or whatever you have to do, right? So what we're going to do is we're going to fire off a few questions. We're going to put – DJ Priest is going to put 2 minutes on the clock. We're going to fire off some questions, kind of rapid fire. And, you know, give us whatever comes to the top of your head, man. It should be a lot of fun, nothing tricky, but it's going to be, it's going to be interesting because Big Seth is always good at finding some jewels, some gems
right.
out there.
All right,
We might have you laughing a little bit. We usually get people laughing a little bit with this. So okay.
We'll
got to
have fun on the 2-minute drill.
Got
to have
always,
fun.
Oh, you got
always,
to.
Always. Big Seth, you want me to start it off? You got it, boss.
You can kick it off.
All right, here we go. Ready, Priest? True or false? A psychic actually predicted that you and Femi would be teammates with the Miami Dolphins.
Hey, that is exactly true. In Vancouver, Canada, I was there and a psychic was like, your brother's surrounded by palm trees. You're going to go join him and you'll both be very successful. And I had 10 teams recruiting me at the time. And I'm like, give me the palm trees, baby. Let's go.
Wow. That's
crazy. I don't normally believe in that stuff, but that's pretty crazy. Surrounded by palm trees. All right. We read that you can say hello in 15 different languages. Is it still 15?
Shoot. It might be 10 now, but I can give you some. Konnichiwa. Ni hao ma. Chitori. That's Farsi. Hola. Bawoni. Merci. Oh, that's no. Whatever. I just gave you 5 or 6.
That's pretty good.
Hell yeah. That's 5 more than I know.
But it's all good.
All right. You know, you wore number 50 at UCLA and with the Dolphins, 94 with the Bears, 51 with the Ravens. What was your favorite number?
The one with Ayan Badejo on the back. That's the only one that mattered.
That's right.
And whatever that decal was on the side. The number, I wasn't married to a number.
All right. What was more difficult, tackling an NFL kick returner or tackling the American Ninja Warrior obstacle course?
Oh, man, I have to say Ninja Warrior. They have some smoke for you because obviously I only got through 2 or 3 obstacles. But, yeah, that Ninja Warrior is no joke. And at the time, I was 230, so it ain't built for big people
it
either.
It is not built for 230 pounds. That's for
not
sure.
Built for right, most bro. People. All right, very which true. Was more exciting, sacking Carson Palmer 4 times in a single game at UCLA or that Tom Brady interception we talked about on Monday Night Football?
Man, it's got to be that Tom Brady interception in my first NFL start on Monday Night Football with everybody watching and John Madden doing the broadcast.
Oh, man, you got the best of both worlds.
All right, we talked about you and your brother being Cali guys. In 2003, the Dolphins had a few others. Of course, Ricky Williams. Of course, Junior Seau, Brock Marion, Sammy Knight. Who was the most California dude out of that whole crew?
Oh, man, that's a tough one because California is so California. Like, we're all so much the same. But, man, probably Ricky Williams because he was showing up having his own meals cooked. He was having different stuff done. He was already doing yoga back in 2003 and all that. He had dreadlocks. Like, he's very bohemian California for sure.
That is the
And the piercings and tattoos.
He had it all. Granola that over is. Gangs. That's exactly. That's the 2-minute drill, man. He ripped through that thing, Juice, like
killed
a nickel linebacker should.
Killed it. Yeah, that was so good, Brendan. That was outstanding, man. Turnover offense, man. The offense turned it over, Big Seth.
There it is. That's exactly what should happen. And that's what he does in a 2-minute drill. Ask Tom Brady. He just told you about
that's
it.
That's right.
Look, man.
Yeah, you guys said there's going to be a lot of laughing. I was like, man, you don't get that turnover. You don't shut him down to 4. You're either going to cry or you're going to laugh.
That's
so,
right.
We cried enough that season. We cried enough. We needed that moment. Trust me. We definitely needed that moment. Look, I know we initially had hoped to do this in person and you changed your schedule. I know you said you spent about a month at a time down here in Florida. So I hope we can connect with you next time you're here. Me and Juice and Preach want to take you out to lunch. But even doing this via Zoom or whatever, it was so great to see you. Congrats on all that you're doing, the important work that you're doing at home, in the community, and certainly man, so in business, good. Man. It was great, great, great to have you here.
Yeah, thank you for having me, guys. And you know, I got a huge admiration for all of you guys. So I appreciate you giving us an opportunity to come back and connect with the fans and you guys doing what you're doing by keeping the fans and the players connected. I think you guys are filling a huge void because we still want to interact with the fans and the fans still want to interact with us. And of course, we want to be on with you guys. So I'm game anytime.
That's what's up, Brendan. Hey, thanks for diving in, Brendan.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, Dog fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rocking with OJ and Seth when we dive up in that fish tank. Fans with attitude, we okay, this one for them diehards. Celebrate big or cry hard. Leave it all on the field, we gon' try hard. Old school, a new school, mix it in. Feeling like we up close when we listening. Dolphins tales, in Miami is the deep end. We vibing with our favorite players, no secret. We get with Seth and McDuffie, bringing up stories we never heard to the public. Bet we love it, Dolphins fans never budging. We loyal to the team, whether happy or we upset. We be like, what's next? Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you ready for that water, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you down with Dolphins Nation, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. You looking at that fish tank, it's time to dive in. Fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rockin' with OJ and Seth, time to dive up in that fish tank. Dog fans with attitude, we about to dive up in that fish tank.